This is Julie Pearson, Little Thunder. Today is Thursday, April 5th, and I'm interviewing Peggy Tiger as part of the Oklahoma Native Artist Project for the Oklahoma Oral History Program at Oklahoma State University. Peggy, you're the matriarch of a very important art family for Oklahoma, beginning with your husband Jerome's famous contributions to Native art, and now being carried on by your children and grandchildren. Thank you for agreeing to talk with me today.
Well, you're very welcome.
Where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in Muskogee, Oklahoma, right here where we are now in Muskogee. And I grew up in Muskogee and Eufaula.
Back and forth. Did you have grandparents in both places? Or?
No, my family was in Eufaula. But my mother lived in Muskogee, you know, worked at the hospital here in town. She was a nurse, and that's why we lived there. But I did finish high school in Eufaula.
So that was my next question, what your mother did for a living. That was probably fairly unusual for her to be a nurse at that time.
My parents were divorced, you know, and therefore she needed to earn her living.
Right. Brothers, did you have any brothers or sisters?
I had a brother, but my brother died before I was born.
And you're Cherokee on your mom's side?
On my mom's side.
Did you have a good relationship with your grandparents? Were they still
living? Oh, absolutely a good relationship with my grandmother. My grandfather had died earlier. He was a judge in Eufaula, and he was a fine old Southern man that came from Alabama.
And married your grandmother.
Married my grandmother. You know, that's where the Cherokee blood comes from, of course, my grandmother.
So what kinds of things did they expose you to, your grandparents?
Well, my grandmother was just an absolute delight. My favorite thing in the world was, you know, sitting and talking to my grandmother when I was a child.
Did she tell you any stories or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was an amazing that her mother was a fine medicine woman, and she was one of the rare people in those day and time. You know, we're talking about the early part of the 19th century, whose children, she didn't lose a child because they would send them, when they were sick, you know, to the medicine woman in Pahrump, Oklahoma, and she would cure them every time.
So all of her children had survived, yeah.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. And what was your first exposure to art that you remember, seeing a piece of art?
Well, I didn't know anything. I was interested, like, in horses and didn't know anything in the world about art until I met my husband-to-be, Jerome Tiger. I mean, he was just like all art.
Right. So, sometimes I know my friends who are Cherokee have said, you know, we want our kids to marry Cherokee. I don't know if that was your mom or grandma's attitude or...
Well, they were very pleased I married a full-blood Indian boy, and that worked very well, except the only fault he had is was not Cherokee, he was Creek.
Right.
But better than nothing.
So, basically, Jerome's drawings, the first time that you were kind of stopped and paid attention to art and started kind of thinking about it was through Jerome.
Yes.
Did you two go to art shows together before you got married, or?
No, but I mean, he just was, if he could get a hold of something to draw with, he was constantly sketching without even knowing what he was doing. I mean, it just happened. That's how he was.
Came automatically. Did he ask you, did he sketch you quite a bit?
Oh, yes. He just, anything that was around him, you know, he sketched.
Right. So during those times, did you just kind of sit with him and let him do his sketching, or did you read, or?
Well, I've always been an addicted reader. you know, my entire life. I was very fortunate. Some of the best books that I've ever read, I read when I was like in third grade, because my mother was a very wise woman, and she would make sure that I had all these terrific books that are still my favorites. I mean, Huckleberry Finn, that's the best book ever written by an American. I don't like Mark Twain because his attitude towards Indian people is hideous, but I still have to read his books because the man was the best writer that's ever come out of the United States of America, I'm convinced.
So in like grade school, junior high, up till high school, did you yourself get exposed to any drawing or painting or?
No.
Okay. Never interested, but
like... Well, I never had any talent whatsoever. I mean, there is talent and then there's me, and it's the both ends of the spectrum.
Did you do pretty well in school though, academically?
Yes.
So when you and Jerome got married,
you know, books are my thing, not art.
Right. You stayed at home, right? You, as a homemaker, sort of started out.
Uh-huh.
And I know my husband was a pretty good businessman when he came to marketing his paintings before he met me. But like once we met, he sort of wanted me to take over that. How did it play out with you and Jerome?
Well, I wanted to work, but Jerome said he thought it would be a much better idea for me to go to school, so I did that. I was attending college, you know, when my youngest child was only 2 weeks old when Jerome died, and so I wasn't in school right then, but you know, most of our marriage, I was going to school. You know, not full-time, but, you know, going to school.
Was that sort of a hard balancing act?
Not really. I always liked school.
And so he would take care of the kids and do his artwork?
Uh-huh. I mean, he could do his artwork no matter what else he was doing. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, he'd be talking to someone and he'd be scratching with one hand. You know, when he'd sign the back of a check, sometimes I'd sign them and the buyer would be very, very disappointed and totally horrified, because if Jerome signed his name, he'd do an exquisite painting on the back of the check. Right under his signature. So those were checks that weren't, you know, put away.
Yes. Oh, that's amazing.
He was quite an amazing character.
And I'm just kind of thinking, for me to be able to get up sometimes when my husband's been working and see something that he's finished. And
it's sort
of like Christmas all the time.
I mean, it's just really, totally awesome, huh?
You remember any particular moments when you just saw something he'd been working on and he'd been at school or whatever? And...
Well, he did formulate a whole new way of doing Native American art. And, you know, that was just awesome to see him doing things when there was not anything in that style in the world, because he was inventing it. It was just really very exciting.
In fact, some of the Native images that he was creating were the first painted,
yes,
with those themes that you had been exposed to.
Yes. I never knew anyone so talented, and he thought it was the most amazing and delightful thing in the world that he could make a living without working, he thought. But, I mean, he painted all the time. I mean, to anyone you would think it was... Goodness, man worked and worked and worked, but not to him.
When you went to some of the first shows that he had at Nettie, did he have shows with Nettie Wheeler?
Oh, Nettie Wheeler just absolutely adored him. And I mean, she worked with him constantly. There couldn't have been anyone better than Nettie Wheeler. Well, the drum, amazing woman. I mean, that was her life, Native American art. you know, to find someone like Jerome, she was ecstatic.
Right. So Jerome sort of put the paintings in that he didn't really, it was all his choices, what he put in.
Oh, absolutely. That had to be.
Priced his work, working with Nettie, though.
I mean, he'd give things away. He wasn't interested in money. He wasn't interested in a lot of things that people would ordinarily be interested in. But, I mean, he had a good time. He liked to, you know, go out and run around with his brothers and so on. But he could paint, like, for 3 days and three nights without sleep. I mean, he could just go into, well, you wouldn't call it a trance. Goodness knows, he had to be very wide awake and, you know, to do what he did. But he just, there was like two very opposite sides of him.
So, do you remember one of the first shows that you attended with Jerome when he was showing his work?
That was at a department store here in Muskogee, Calhoun's department store to be exact.
What was that like for you?
Well, it was just quite thrilling. I was very proud of him.
Were you a little nervous too?
No, I was too young to have enough sense to even be nervous. I mean, I was only 18 when I married.
But also, as an artist's wife, you always have, there's quite a bit riding on the success of a show, or, uh-huh. You know, it's...
But it all just came so easy that I just thought that was a natural thing.
So even though you didn't have a lot of extra money, the paintings were pretty much paying for it.
Uh-huh.
The basic.
Yeah, we did pretty well, you know, all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, he was good enough that everything he painted, I mean, it immediately sold. And he, you know, we did pretty well because he was so fast. I mean, he didn't hurry. It wasn't hurrying to him, but he's just his natural way of painting. He could do one thing after another. You know, like I say, on the back of his checks, there'd be his signature in the intricate drawing.
Oh my goodness, yeah, you'd want to frame it and not deposit it. Well, do you think that, you know, you and the children, the two kids, right?
I had three kids and Chris died, he was murdered, yeah. That was so nice.
Right, so you and the three children after Jerome passed away, what were some of your sources of strength during that period?
Well, to take care of my children, you know, and support them. And then my cousin, Molly Babcock, she's an attorney in California now, but, you know, I grew up with her. You know, she was also, you know, lived in Eufaula with her family. And Molly and I, you know, formed the Jerome Tiger Art Company, you know, to sell Jerome's, you know, prints of Jerome's work. And
what year was that?
Probably about 69. Jerome died in 67. And so the first place we went to was to Dallas, Texas. You know, Molly would go and say, "Now this is the artist's widow." You know, I was standing there like a goon. And she would say, "And these are his beautiful prints." Well, no one would buy a thing in the world. One man I never will forget, he said, "Well, you two ladies are fighting a big battle with a short stick." And so we went back to our hotel room, and I said, "Molly, they're not going to believe that two women can do something like this, you know, sell art. They're not going to buy one thing. We're going to have to change our whole philosophy, and you're going to have to go in there as the saleswoman, and I'm going to have to stay at home and answer the phone and answer questions when people call." So the owner of the company was M.A. Babcock. We didn't say this is Molly Ann Babcock, believe me. We didn't have to lie to one person because naturally they assumed a man was running the company. And after that, it was phenomenal. I mean, we sold all over. Absolutely amazing. I mean, that same varmint in Dallas, Texas, and it said you're fighting a big battle with a short stick. We refused to sell to, and he was furious.
Good for you.
I mean, we couldn't even say, you know, what we were really doing, though. They thought we were a very modern kind of company. You know, to have that main settlement out there, a woman, and to have a woman as knowledgeable as I was about Jerome Tiger, oddly enough, huh, on the phone. And see, this went on and on and on until we decided we could come out of the shadows. And that's when Molly and I wrote that book, The Life and Art of Jerome Tiger, and it was the best seller OU Press Publishing Company ever had.
Wow. To this date, it set the sales record.
Well, I don't know what now.
Or at least at that time.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book.
But it took a long time before we could dare come out of the shadows.
Right.
I mean, that was just absolutely horrendous, what women could not do in those days. I mean, you just could not.
Mm-hmm. Just to go back to when Jerome passed away, Molly came out, I guess, for the services.
Oh, yes.
And were there many... Had he left many unfinished paintings? Or
no, Jerome was a... sell everything he painted immediately upon sale. There was a long waiting list of people to see what he painted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he created a prolific number of paintings, much more than you would possibly, in your wildest thoughts, think that someone could do in that length of time. I mean, he was that fast.
Maybe a piece a day or...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and sometimes totally intricate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, creating a whole new style of Indian art.
Right. So when...
It wasn't too shabby.
So when you kind of had begun to digest sort of what the situation was, and I'm wondering if he was conscious of, do you think Jerome was conscious at any point of, this is a kind of, this will provide for my family if I'm not around? Do you think he ever thought about that?
I don't know.
But once you sort of, when did you make that mental decision that you maybe needed to, that people loved his art and they were going to be asking for his art?
Well, people just did not realize how much of that art there was. And that's why my cousin and I, you know, like I say, you know, we got together and decided we're going to have to do something about that, because the man created much more art than anyone would in their wildest thoughts would think possible.
And yet there were lots of people who still loved his work.
You know, it was available. And there was people all over the United States. You know, once they were convinced that there were men running this company, they just had a very knowledgeable person that would answer the phone, and they had a very knowledgeable person that was coming to their galleries and bringing the art.
Right. So you don't remember if it was Molly's idea or yours, or it just
evolved? It was my idea.
Okay.
Oh, you mean to start
the company? To start the company.
Well, it started because this guy, his name was Ted Pearsall, and he came to Muskogee, and he wanted to handle Jerome's art. And instead of doing that, then Molly and I got together and we did it. But we almost just blew the whole thing by, you know, saying who we really were.
Right. Okay, so he approached you first. Had he been a collector of Jerome's, or he just had seen his work?
And I had seen his work.
And he knew that there was something unique there.
Yes.
Who put the money into the company originally to help you guys get started printing?
Well, we didn't have any money, but there was a guy named Bob Lanacker in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and there was Tuffa Litho up there. And they were one of the best printers in the United States. And they were so in love with Jerome's art, as, you know, someone that was intelligent, as Bob Lanacker was, would be.
And so he did not. Jerome too?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And so he didn't charge us one thing until we could pay.
That's wonderful.
He just, you know, would do the prints, and he was the only one that could do those intricate colors that I was aware of at that time, and I'm talking about nationwide. So So.
Would he have you come up and look at the proofs?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And did he print from his own paintings to start with?
Well, he...
Or how did you gather the pieces?
Well, we gathered the pieces, you know, from different collectors because I would have, you know, knowledge of who the collectors were, and, you know, they were perfectly willing to do that because they've received, you know, money for it, for one thing, and another thing, they were good people and willing to help.
Oh, so you gave them a small percentage
yes.
that you earned from the prints.
Uh-huh.
So you created the list of people that had the pieces that you thought would be good for printing.
Yes.
And then took them to Tulsa List.
Uh-huh.
So how many prints did they produce the first year? Do you remember first year or two?
I think we just did, you know, like three. But, you know, would sell out and then they'd go up in value. So it was an excellent investment for people.
How did you decide how many to do at a time?
Well, ordinarily we'd do 1,500, but then there'd be smaller editions.
And was that a decision and, you know, made?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing to people. I mean, they didn't realize how prolific he was. How could they?
Right. So that really expanded the audience for
oh, absolutely.
Jerome.
I mean, the man was 26 years and 1 month and 18 days and 13 days old when he died. My goodness, to think of what he did. I mean, it was like a person who lived a long lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty quick at that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody that can do an intricate little sketch on the back of a check...
Yeah. So, where were some of the places that you traveled, or that
Molly traveled? After that fiasco in Dallas, Texas, I did not travel anymore. I mean,
okay.
You know, I said, we're not going to do it this way. It's not going to work at all.
Right.
You know, I had to, you know, change the whole...
Right.
And they thought we were so modern and feminist because I was the one answering the phone. You know, here was one woman that knew something, and there was Molly out there, our main saleswoman. Our main salesperson was a woman.
Yes.
They always thought Mimi Babcock was a man. They assumed we never lied once.
They thought it was.
Yeah, they absolutely knew Mimi Babcock was a man.
Did they ever ask to speak to M.A. Babcock?
No, because I was good on that phone.
They didn't need any more information. You were able to fill the orders.
Mm-hmm. I was able to fill the orders, tell them about the artist, tell them about the art.
Right.
Oddly enough, huh?
So how long did it take to pay back the original printing
investment? Oh, about a year.
Investment?
I mean, those prints sold tremendously well as soon as they... had it in their heads there were a couple women running this show. I mean, it was that bad in those days. I mean,
right.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like that, thank God, now.
What were some of the places that Molly went that were particularly good sales?
All over.
Outlets?
Molly was quite a talker. Like I said, she's a lawyer and she could out-talk a Philadelphia lawyer. I mean, no one could have been better than her. I could not be myself, do it.
But she continued to work her legal, she continued to work as a lawyer.
No, she wasn't a lawyer yet.
Okay. So that was her living too.
Uh-huh.
It was both your living.
Both our living.
Yeah.
And her mother was, you know, here helping with my children. I mean, that woman was awesome.
Okay. Because, yeah, when you're running a business out of your house, it's hard to,
yeah,
you know... take care of the kids, and so Molly's mom would help you.
Oh, absolutely.
Kids. And was your mom still around?
My mother died 2 years after Jerome.
I see. Sorry.
I mean, she just couldn't believe, you know, how he could make money. She was just, thought that was the most amazing thing that ever occurred.
With artwork?
Yeah, with artwork.
Yeah. So she didn't have any misgivings about you marrying an artist.
Well, she was horrified at her at first. And then she was just like, praise God. I think that's what killed her when Jerome died. Mm-hmm. I mean, she adored him. Mm-hmm. I mean, she really did.
So you're running the printing company. You're selling prints. You're continuing to print each year. When did you decide to get this place? Is this a family place?
Or yes.
Okay.
I built this house.
You built this house?
Uh-huh. I mean, not personally.
Right, but you had it built with money from the print art business. That's wonderful. It's a beautiful place.
Well, thank you. Been here almost 50 years.
Yeah. And when did you decide to open the gallery?
Well, actually, we opened that gallery because then we went into the making t-shirt business, which I never used one of Jerome's paintings on a t-shirt, and I never will. But we used Johnny Tiger, his brother's,
mm-hmm.
You know, the guy that's on that end of the
house.
Right,
right.
And, oh, that went over big. We were one of, like, JCPenney's top 10 suppliers. I mean, we were that good.
Wow. So you were selling to department stores?
Oh, yeah, we were selling nationwide.
Different Indian stores and gift shops.
Uh-huh, all kinds of places. And I found out I was kind of good at business because I had excellent products, no thanks to me.
Yeah, you believed in them because they were good.
Absolutely, they were good.
Yeah.
That's one thing about me. I do know good from not so good. I was lucky. And in some ways, and horribly unlucky in others.
Mm.
I mean, some guy that's only 26 years old and dies, and my son was only 22. That's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Murdered. And Dana has Parkinson's, and Lisa has Parkinson's. And Lisa has AIDS. Isn't that just all so nice?
Well, Dana's often spoken about you as like being the main reason that she kind of found her painting voice.
Oh, bless her heart.
Found it again.
Dana's a pet. I mean, she really is.
And I wanted to kind of talk about the fact that here you have this, you know, thriving print business, but then you're also seeing, and your brother-in-law is an artist, but you're also seeing that your children have this, these amazing artistic gifts. Can you talk about maybe the first, when you first started realizing that Dana and Chris, and I think Lisa, I guess, also drew and painted, I'm not sure.
Lisa was a very talented artist, but she just, you know, didn't want to do it. She just was too in awe of her father's art, so, you know, she backed away from it. But, you know, they were always, you know, quite talented. My grandchildren are so talented. And it's a miracle because they sure didn't get one speck of talent from me. There's no one less talented
well,
than
kinds
me.
Of like, talent.
Well, I know how to read.
So when did you realize that Dana and Chris, I mean, was that part of the reason for starting the gallery too? Because you could have just stayed in the print business.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, too, you know, I adopted three children, you know, so I had, you know, have awesome responsibilities always, you know, so I needed to make money, and I would do it with things that I was particularly interested in. You know, I wouldn't want to do something that didn't mean anything to me, and I never have.
So when did you adopt the three children?
Oh, years ago, when my children were young. Mm-hmm. One was a little blonde child, and one was a full-blood Indian boy, and another was a little blonde child's brother, you know, actual brother. I don't think I'll, you know, have the right, though, you know, since they're not here to say anything, you know, to, and really talk about them.
But when your children...
But I mean, I had like, there's been as many as like 15 people living in this house. I just take in kids, you know, not adopting, but...
Also,
you know,
foster just, parenting a little bit or...
Well, just somehow that come and their parents would give them permission, and here they were. I mean, that Evie Chikola, he is absolutely terrific writer, won all kinds of awards, been to Harvard. I mean, he's no dummy. And that guy, you know, he's the only one out of all the people. My favorite thing was to recommend books to people. He's the only one that listened to one word I said and actually read what I tell him to read. And out of all those kids, the only one was Eddie. Now, isn't that something?
And he spent a couple of years here?
Oh, yeah, years and years here. He liked it.
His family lived close by?
Yes, but that somehow let people come here. Yes.
It was a good gathering place for...
Kind of a three-ring circus, I guess.
Well, and Dan and Lisa and Chris's friends.
Like, oh, yes. Yeah. Lord help us, yes.
I mean, but these kids who came weren't necessarily their friends. They were often just...
Well, it was their friends, but then they'd come to live.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, just move on in.
Right.
I must have been completely insane. Now there's only two people live in this house, myself and my brother-in-law, Donnie, and he lives way down here and I live way down there. Or just the opposite, yeah.
Well, you and Jerome got married first, but I understand that you had a close friend who married Johnny.
Absolutely. You know, Carolyn, that one I was talking about. That.
So who introduced...
Ancestors went to my ancestor's wedding in 1900. So obviously...
That's how back your, far back your back, friendship goes.
Go back to the 1800s.
Wow. Wow. So when did Carolyn meet Johnny?
She met Johnny because, you know, I was with Jerome, and so naturally she'd meet him. He'd be around too. And then, you know, eventually they married.
So when you started the gallery here in Muskogee, what was your thought?
Well, it wasn't a gallery then. I mean, it was a t-shirt manufacturing company.
Okay.
And like I said, it won national honors.
Right.
It was, we did, they were all hand screened, not, you know, sitting there drawing them onto t-shirts, but, you know, they were, you know, made with machine, but not automatic machines, you know, where someone would have to be right there and do each one. We had a lot of employees. I mean, it was a big old hard.
How many employees did you have?
Oh, sometimes 15.
Wow.
I mean, to me, that's plenty. I mean, a lot.
And did any of the kids work or Johnny work at the t-shirt?
Oh, Johnny did every one of the designs. I made up my mind I was never going to take one of Jerome's paintings and put on a t-shirt. He would have to have been here to say, do that. I wouldn't have done it on my own by any means. So he did all the shirts. I could show you some. I mean, he did some beautiful shirts.
Yeah, and I've seen some. They are nice. We might take a picture at the end or something.
I'll even give you a shirt.
When did you decide to... Oh, well, thank you. When did you decide to then go into the art business? And I think you started out showing some of the Dana's and Chris's work, right? And perhaps Lisa's.
Yes. It was just naturally, you know, what happened, because once, you know, Tony and I were living in the same house, you know, that he'd worked with them. And when there was an art show, he'd get... You can't imagine how many friends my children have. And, you know, before an art show, it would just be ludicrous. I mean, there'd just be people lined up, everyone painting, all these kids.
Oh, all their friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And Johnny said that he would take both the kids and their entries.
Yes.
And make sure they in her jokes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he had, you know, mat them all for them and, you know, take them on out to wherever, or mail them on out to where they needed to go. It was a very artistic house and one unartistic person, me.
But you must have, behind the scenes, I mean, you're sort of creating the environment in which can happen.
Yeah, totally respect.
Yeah.
You know, for what they were doing or attempting to do.
Well, did you ever go out to, did you work at the gallery once the gallery was open?
Oh, round the clock.
Okay, so you did run the gallery.
No, oh, absolutely. Yeah. That was quite something.
How was it? It was different for you because you were used to working here at home. And
well, it was different, but it was, I mean, we had huge orders, you know, like from maybe one company, hundreds of shirts ordered. So we really worked hard. I mean, I worked very long hours there, but it was okay because my children were there too. They worked there also.
That's what I was wondering. So did you pay them?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding? You know what kids are like.
Yeah. So you pay them per hour or per day, or that was their extra hour. Money?
Well, it was pretty good salary, actually, I thought. But they were good workers.
And how about Dana's originals and Chris's originals? They were starting to put paintings in the gallery, too.
Oh, they? Absolutely.
Did you have some shows?
Yes.
You remember the first show that you
well,
had?
Well, sometimes we had shows that were so big that you couldn't get all the people in at the same time. You know, they have to wait to come in. You've seen that gallery. It's pretty big.
Yeah. So one of the first, do you remember the first show when you were showing Dana and Chris's work? Do you remember the very first one?
No, not any one show in particular. Mm-hmm. I just remember that it was quite successful.
Mm-hmm. And you would
see, I've been very fortunate in some ways, and it's unfortunate anyone I've ever seen or heard tell of around here. Mm-hmm. And others, you know, not like those poor victims of the Holocaust, goodness knows, but mm-hmm. pretty bad. You know, I thought surely it would kill me when Chris was murdered. It's, you know, that's the worst.
Mm-hmm. Can't imagine.
He was such a beautiful person. When he was in high school, every year, you know, he was really quite a star on the football team, and every year, you know, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, you know, they would vote for whatever girl he was going to take to the prom. And so
wow.
I remember before one year, I think his junior year, it was awful. All these girls were coming here, sneaking in the house. Doors were always unlocked because there's too many people live here. And it was just nuts. All these girls sneaking up there because it wasn't ever that he was taking his own girlfriend, just, you know, however he picked. And they were just up and down the stairs all night.
Oh, that's
yeah, Chris
amazing.
Was a beautiful young man and mm-hmm. delightful. But, mm-hmm. yeah, however, year we started going through this big scene right before selecting the homecoming queen. Chris was one of the prettiest boys I've ever seen. He was just absolutely beautiful and so kind, so good.
Mm-hmm. And had, I know he liked boxing. I think
oh, yeah.
Any interest that Jerome
had. Yeah, he was
had.
A Golden Glove champion like his uncle and like his father. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as Johnny is concerned, they wanted to turn him pro, and he said, no way. I mean, he never lost but one fight ever, as Johnny ever did. He was amazing as far as his physical capabilities when he was young. And Joan wasn't too shabby either.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I say, Johnny, when they wanted to get him to turn pro, he said, no way.
You kind of have to make a choice.
Well, he didn't want to get his pretty face beat up
like
he would in that level.
Right.
You know, around here in Oklahoma and, you know, Golden Gloves, he wouldn't.
Right. So, can you talk about the book process a little bit when you decided, who suggested it, or if you both decided, you and Molly, at the same time? How did you know?
We just knew then that we could come out of the woodwork and, you know, say who we were and write a book because, you know, it was a done deal. You know, it was very popular art and it didn't matter that there were two women and we wanted to get that in, for goodness sake. You know,
and
so
it
that's
was
when 1980.
I didn't
have no idea.
I
can't
even remember. Something. I think maybe 1990.
I just, you know, it was, you know, good to be able to, you know, do that.
Say who you were.
Say who we were. Say that two women were actually doing this. Ha, ha, ha.
Right.
Because then, you know, no one objected.
Right.
Isn't that awful to have a world like that? That's exactly how it was, though.
But with a book, too, it must be hard to...
That book was harder to write than... I swear I don't know if I'd ever started that project if I'd known how much...
Yeah, so how did you do it?
Just had to keep after it, you know, after we'd gone so far, I had to keep going. You know, and owed it to Jerome, certainly. I mean, he was so talented. And then people could just see, you know, by a broad spectrum of his work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I just can't speak clearly.
I understand you just fine. So, would you... Sort of just every day, did you try to work, write every day a little bit? Some of
your not a little bit. We wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote.
Did Molly come out here and stay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Like
for
I
how
say,
long?
Her mother was just superwoman. You know, you could ask Johnny Tiger, that's his favorite person on earth, is Aunt Lorraine. She was his teacher when he was in the sixth grade. And I mean, that is the hardest working woman that ever lived on this earth, as far as any I've seen. I mean, she was just ridiculous in her ability to constantly work. Just loved it. She'd say, the Alex is in the desk, we're going to get him out. And then she'd get you started, and she'd work, and she'd make everyone else work.
So, how long did Molly come out and stay to work on the book with you?
Years.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, she wasn't here all the time.
She wasn't here all the time. She'd come for a week or two.
Yeah.
And would you...
No, she'd come every day.
She'd come every
day. She had a home in Muskogee.
Okay. She'd come every day for a period of 3 or 4 months?
More like 3 or 4 years, no more like about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot harder than we thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. And you would generate... Would you just do free writing? How did you...
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And we had a guy here that worked for us that was one of the smartest people that ever came down the pike. And I remember one time I was talking to someone on the phone and there was a kid standing next to me batting on a basketball and he'd go boing, boing. And I was saying, well, we're doing really good because Danny's here and he works so fast. And they thought that his going on the typewriter was just basketball, boing, boing.
So you were generating the material, you were free writing, and then this person that you hired was typing up?
Yeah, he was an old friend from high school. So.
Okay. The work, and then Molly was kind of acting more as editor, or
no,
was she writing too?
Actually, I ended up writing all that book except that chapter on John being born.
Okay, yeah, it's a beautifully written book, so you did a wonderful job.
Well, thank you. Well, it sure wasn't something that it was done professionally, or I would have certainly finished it a lot sooner than that, I think. I mean, 2 years, good Lord.
That's not long for a book, actually.
Well, I guess that's true.
Was it hard, though, to remember some things?
No. I mean, it was hard as far as, you know, heartbreaking, but, you know, not hard to remember. It would be now. That was a while back.
And then you had to, then OU Press published the book.
Yes.
And they took care of the distributing it and everything. But yes, you sold it out of the gallery probably as well.
Oh, yeah. We sold it to our clients. And we had a limited edition, leather-bound edition, too. It was $500 a book, you know, so that was... You know, I always needed as much money as I could get because, like I said, there was all kinds of children that lived here.
Yeah.
And Lord knows I didn't pay rent.
So you were...
They're all good kids, though.
Yeah. That's wonderful to help be helping them along, too. So, do you continue... Did you... The limited edition books, the leather-bound ones, you only published a certain amount of them.
500.
And how quickly did they sell?
Pretty fast. They're gone.
Uh-huh. But you continue to sell the book through the gallery a little bit.
Well, there's not any more books, really.
Oh.
It's sold out. Unless okay. OU Press, you know, goes ahead and does another edition, that's it.
Oh, well, they should, probably.
That's the first big book like that that they ever did, you know, big art book like that. Now they have expanded, they're liable to do anything, but they didn't then.
Yeah, that's a good point, that they were really sort of taking a chance.
Yeah, they were. Book. They were.
Did you meet with the publishers, you and Molly?
Oh, Lord, yes. A couple of times? Oh, yeah. More than a couple of times. There were times when we were trying to make deadlines that we were camped up there at OU Press Publishing Company.
Oh, wow. You had to stay in Norman for a
Yeah, and then I'd
days.
Have those kids and I'd have to get back. And I remember sometimes I thought I'm going to kill somebody on this roller myself also, you know, to drive back, you know. It was pretty tough, but Aunt Lorraine was always there.
Were they immediately receptive when you proposed the idea for the book, or did you have
Yes,
to
they of... were quite receptive, because we were kind of, you know, doing quite well by then, you know, as far they, you know, could show them, you know, how many prints we'd sold and so on, so they would, you know, assume that they could sell books.
You had started taking classes when you and Jerome first got married at Bacone, and you eventually changed schools and began taking classes at Northeastern, is that right?
That was after Jerome's death that I went to Northeastern. I mean, what I went to Bacone some more. I took as many hours as I could take it back home, but I didn't graduate from there. You know, I just took as many hours as I was allowed there.
Right.
Then went to Northeastern and graduated and received my BA at Northeastern State University.
In...
Well, it was not Northeastern State College in those days.
In what field?
American Studies.
And was this also while you were working the prints? Or...
No, it was a little after.
A little after, okay. And then you went to work for Cherokee Nation?
I went to work at the Cherokee Nation in 2004, and it was a job from heaven.
What was your job?
Well, I had to read. Then write about
that.
What I wrote. It was just too much to bear, almost.
Was it connected with Cherokee history? Or
oh, absolutely. I had to go and dig in the archives. You can imagine how that distressed me.
And then they were going to use the research for...
Well, for various things, and I get to write about them. Like, I get to do our monthly report, you know, for different divisions, what they've done for the month. You know, and I like to write.
Right.
I mean, that wasn't difficult writing. It was interesting writing. Everything I did there, if I had to and was a wealthy woman, which I've never been, I would have paid them to let me do that kind of work. It was that delightful to me.
Right.
It just broke my heart after that car wreck. You know, I was in the hospital for 6 months and almost died, but it was awful, you know, to lose that job.
Right. And then to have to come back, be working your way back physically to being, you know, more active again.
Well, see, I'm never going to be very active. But I was in perfect physical condition because I used to jog every day 12 miles.
Oh, my goodness.
And so you talk about in good shape, I was.
You used to jog out here in the country.
Uh-huh. You know, see over there, this, you know, just like a circle
for
jog. And then sometimes in a park in town, Civitan Park.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I was in perfect shape.
The love
I can imagine. I can't even walk, you know, without a walker now. And I used to go 12 miles a day, and I'm not lying.
Right. When you and Jerome were together, that was something you shared too, I guess, was love of athletics.
Oh,
did
yes.
you love athletics in high school?
Oh, absolutely. See, I was never good at athletics, you know, like hit something with a paddle, you know, like play tennis, Not good at that, but I was always very fast, and I learned, you know, by talking to doctors, or, you know, somehow I learned that I was amazing in that I never got hurt. I could go that far as, you know, running and jogging.
And when did you take that up, seriously, the jogging?
Well, I mean, it wasn't anything really serious. Well, actually, I did win medals and stuff.
Well, tell me about that.
Well, because by the time I was entering things, naturally I was going to win because of my age. You know, I was up there high enough to where there weren't many people in my division, so I did well.
Were you in the Tulsa Run ever?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just, you know, any place where, you know, there's running, you know, because, now this sounds
In your late 30s, or?
Oh, later, but when I was a child, I ran constantly. I was a tomboy and ran with a group of boys, and we ran from morning till night. You know, that's when kids used to be turned out for the day. I don't care how strict or careful their parents were. That's what happened in those days. That's a long time ago. And so I think I built up something I could call on later in those days because I ran with this little gang of boys, and we ran all day. Good. And then when we were having a great crisis in the Cherokee Nation, I ran with the chief of the marshal service over there. You cannot imagine what a horrible fiasco, you know, that was. I was thrown off those steps, and if someone hadn't caught me, you know, it's a Cherokee Nation. I mean, it was just an absolute horror show for, you know, quite some time. But then our people got in. And then I ended up going to work there. And like I say, it was just a job straight from heaven.
Yeah.
Imagine giving me pay to read.
Yeah. And you still read a lot.
All the time. If I'm not, you know, like sitting here talking. Like the next book I will read with it, be this little darling.
Yeah, and you mentioned that this is called Elizabeth's Women, and you admire Queen Elizabeth.
More than anyone in all of history.
Why?
Because in a time when it was totally a man's world, she kicked ass. And the woman could not, I mean, although she adored men, she could not have sex with anyone her whole entire life. I am just in my own mind. You know, people, this is one of those questions from history that people argue continuously. Did Elizabeth die a virgin? I think she did. How could she do otherwise?
Mm-hmm. it was too dangerous if she wanted to keep her. Yeah. Keep her.
I mean, and the woman could speak everything from rushing on around the corner. And, you know, all those years she was so intelligent that she kept people from attacking England because they thought they'd get it an easier way than Mary Elizabeth. So everyone came courting except, guess what? Surprise.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, that's awesome, isn't it?
It is awesome. Well, you know, I think you've kind of talked about some of the low points, but I'm wondering, what have been some of the high points of your life so far?
Well, it was a delight to be married to Jerome Tiger. I mean, he was fun, and I mean, my whole life had gone so right. I mean, it was like this horror that she's married this Jerome Tiger, and how's he ever even going to support her? That's when women usually didn't work. And wow, I mean, he was awesome. Made darn good money, you know, just absolutely, totally talented. I mean, my life was an absolute delight.
And willing to do part of the work and watch the kids. And wanted you to be able to develop your talents.
Oh, yes, absolutely insisted to go to school. I mean, that was very nice because I like school.
You know, I can't really think of anybody whose life has revolved, who's been... As you say, you yourself don't do art, but your life has revolved around art and artists, I guess.
Absolutely.
What is it about art, do you think, that we just really need?
Well, it's just because I got to know Jerome Tiger, and he was just like artist personified. And... You know, so I do have enough sense to, like, totally, you know, appreciate greatness in a field that's comprehensible to me. You know, his favorite artist was Michelangelo, and he's always been mine, too. And, you know, the funniest thing is, you know, when they redid that Sistine Chapel ceiling, they finally found something that could be used to see what's really up there because, you know, they certainly couldn't wash anything off, the Lord knows. And that same color was one that Jerome invented over here in the United States that Michelangelo used. God is my witness. You look at both.
What color was it?
It's a lime green.
Wow.
Now, how about that, huh?
That is something.
I mean, I just, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that came about, you know, when they finally found something that could clean it without hurting it at all.
Right.
After Jerome was dead, but...
Wow.
But lime green.
Yeah, that's really neat.
It's kind of green, you never...
You must have both discovered Michelangelo kind of together then. From when Jerome...
Well, somehow Jerome managed to discover Michelangelo. Now, he never knew that he used that lime green.
Like, right.
But he... it certainly took him away. It was absolutely his favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Mine, too. You know, on my own, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just get cold chills thinking of what he did. You know, like that David and that Pieta. Oh, yeah. Good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jerome's sculptures you got to see as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was an excellent sculptor. The worst thing he did, though, was he did three, and then he decided it'd be fun to use them for target practice, you know, because he had to work with something to make sure he could hold the clay together. He knew how to do it somehow.
Right.
But he did not... want to, you know, do this whole big sculpture and have it crumble because, you know, he was making some kind of little mistake. And so, anyhow, the oddest thing, though, is that lime green that he and Michelangelo used, and Jerome didn't know that he used that.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share or anything we haven't talked about?
No, I think you're very interesting to talk to because I'm doing all the talking. But I'm sure if you were doing the talking, you'd be quite interesting yourself.
Well, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Peggy.
Oh, no. You're very welcome.